Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I am Garrett Weinzerl, ringing in the new year with my good buddy Kyle, and also an allergy attack, the lights of which I haven't seen all year. So if I'm a little quieter today, Kyle, if you see me looking like I'm coughing but you can't hear it, assume I'm coughing and keep talking.
Very well. I will be ready to jump on that grenade should it come up. By the way, it's all frozen here anyway. There are no allergies in the air. They're all stuck in the snow. So bonus points to the Northwest, I guess.
Nice. I did a real life talk, everybody. I spent like an hour in bushes over the weekend pulling all of the dead oak tree leaves out because it had like completely sealed up the gap between the bottom of the bushes and the ground. It just looked disgusting. And I think it may have gotten to me. Pollen may have had its way with me, and but it took till like the middle of the week to really slam me into the ground.
That's disturbing the peace that was the residual pollen, much like going through the closet in the dust. If you can't tell, we've been terribly off the radio this week. I myself have been in like trucks and cars land. I've been spending hours sending monster trucks down a slide. So my brain is mush, but we're nice. Here to talk about Heroes of the Storm.
Nice. I've been doing like emergency extra contract work. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs stuff before the roll of the new year. And I like money. That's nice. A little bit of Heroes, a little bit of Hearthstone, but a whole lot of laying on my couch with my new Xbox. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I've been squeezing in some Heroes here and there.
Man, I forgot how relaxing console gaming is. As someone who spends more than 9 hours a day in front of a computer, it is so nice to play games with your feet up.
I got the subscription for my Switch, so I can play through all the old games that are on the service there.
Oh, sick. Yeah, every once in a while I re-up on that because I feel like playing old stuff.
Yeah, they don't have everything. It's not like franchise-based either. Like, they have some old rare games, but not necessarily Banjo-Kazooie. I don't know if they trade things out or they cycle things or what the deal is. But
Yeah, and Banjo they just put in Smash Brothers. So you'd think they'd like the license would just kind of like they'd work that deal in all at one. But yeah, hey, Kyle, are you a lawyer?
No.
Neither am I.
No, it doesn't make any sense, really, at the end of the day. But I did get to play some Heroes as well. They're holiday games. That is alive and well. It's been a long time since I thought about it, you know? We're such a core audience around here. We get in the game, and if you see a low-level account, you go, oh, well, you know, probably a Smurf. But it was just chaos.
Oh, this time of the year. No, I assume, welcome back.
Yeah.
That's what I assume when I see a low-level account this time of year. There's a lot of people. My college roommates are playing, man. I got in the other day, and the two dudes I lived with in college, they were both in and playing. I haven't seen them in game, I think, since last December.
Wow.
This is when people are like, I want to hang out with my friends from back in the Blizzard day. And I really think there's two options of where you go for your back in the Blizzard day friend excursion. And it's either World of Warcraft or it's Heroes of the Storm.
That's fair.
It is a holiday get together for a lot of people. What did we do after BlizzCon line this year? Because we wanted to capture that BlizzCon experience of like hanging out with your buddies afterwards. We went and played a butt ton of Heroes with our friends, like people we don't usually play Heroes with. And also some devs. Don't feel like name dropping, but it was a really good time. And that's, I think, for the infrequent Heroes fans. Like, that's where it exists. It exists as, it's like this theme park that you get back together with your friends within every once in a while. And it's really cool to see at the end of the year.
That's very true. That's very true. I've been loving my Mephisto. Still on that Sylvanas, but loving Mephisto. Just having a great time with him.
Yeah, you seem to be. I've seen a lot of Mephisto out of you when we play together. I remain unmoored. I've lost my love in Heroes of the Storm, Kyle. I'm not in love with anyone. I'm just going around a sea of everything that got nerfed this year, going, wow, they really came after everything I like.
Yeah. You're lonely for the holidays and social media is not helping. That's basically the feeling.
At least in Heroes of the Storm, yes. Yes, yeah, I've had a wonderful holiday just hanging out on the couch with Katie. That's been very nice.
No, I get it. But like, you know, when you're like, man, I'd really like some friends over, and you're like, well, I'll just lay on the couch and look at social media. There's so many people on the planet and they're not currently hanging out with you. It seems like insanity. And definitely when you get your main hero nerfed or you're not exactly in love with them, it's just like, look at everybody in love out there. Look at Nazebo. Five paces too deep into his lane, he's gonna get ganked, man. You don't know what love is up there.
It's snowing outside. I got my scarf on. I'm walking past the cafe window, and there's Kyle staring lovingly at Mephisto across the cafe table with a latte. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you drink lattes.
I do. Every day, actually. I love making.
You're a big latte man. I knew you liked something with milk. I assumed it was latte. Glad I got it right.
Yeah, well, I'd do a mocha if I could, but, you know, the chocolate, it just takes extra steps. You know, I do the hand press business. I used to work as a barista, so I'm kind of into it.
I got into slow pour this year, if we want to continue the off-topic real-life rambling.
I mean, it is cozy. These are cozy conversations, but I guess we can get on with the show proper if we want.
Probably. It'd be a good thing to do. You came ready and raring to talk about Johanna. Because of, I believe this sparked your interest due to a Reddit post from, I would say this past week, actually a day ago, called, quote, "So what exactly was the idea behind Johanna's rework? Is she supposed to have wave clear or not?" by Redditor Scythic, which is a really cool name. It's like a Pokemon evolution I'm unaware of. But basically talks about how power was stripped out of Condemn, but put back into like Shield Glare. So like, what's the point?
It's an interesting thought. This led to a lot of discussion of people being like, change for change sake is bad. They keep reworking things that don't need reworks. And man, I think that really gets into opinion territory a lot of the time. I think the Sylvanas rework was phenomenal at this point. I think the Rhaegar rework currently overtuned is really, really solid for someone we didn't see a really long time. The Johanna rework stands out because she was just the kitchen sink and they wanted to take it down to, I guess, it doesn't really work. The kitchen sink thing. She was a full bath and they wanted to take it to 1.5. And the problem is, they have now given her back her lane clear in the form of the Zealous Glare. Zealous Glare's damage puts you about 20 points lower than the old Mark Them Sins Exposed build that had lane clear with it. So ultimately, and then you can put another lane clear talent on top of this if you really want with the auto attacks, she's lane clearing at the same speed now as she previously was when she got her big shuffle in order to fix this problem because she was too good at too many things. We now have lane clear Johanna back. And also now Zealous Glare is being used as this poke business. And it's really fun. Yeah, you actually tried it out before the show today. And you said, that's fun. Everything else is still boring.
Everything else sucks, man. Like, I don't feel like a hero. We've been talking about it on the show. It came up a few weeks ago and then we took a break and then it came up again recently. And I was like, man, I should get back on Johanna because this sounds fun. And so, yeah, I did give it a shot today. And the two charges of shield and like, just cinching that last little bit of health on the a-hole who's about to go and die and getting a kill with Shield Glare. I mean, it's super cool. It is super, super, super fun. But my God, everything else on the kit feels terrible, except for Iron Skin. And when you take Steed, that feels good because it's doing what you need it to do. But like, Q&W, what even is the point? It is the quintessential of like, it is the Heroes of the Storm version of that meme of random bullshit go. Like it just feels not even like a hope and a prayer. It just feels like you don't want to get yelled at for not using your abilities is the only reason you're doing it.
Yeah. Would you like to lane clear faster? And you're like, well, sure. I'll buy a fast pass. And they're like, good. Cause it's expensive. And you're like, no, I didn't want to spend all that mana. No, please. This is now required to have a good time. Subdue needs to be baked in, punish or one of the talents where you hit multiple people. It slows, it does more damage. It just needs to be a more interesting ability in the first place. Condemn is fine, but what they've done here is made kind of an environment where the poke potential of Zealous Glare and Shield Glare is really, really good now. We're not so concerned about blinds anymore. After all, if they're dead, you don't have to stop their auto attacks with blinds, which don't stop them permanently. So who cares in that regard? And everything else is kind of dull in that way.
Yeah, I was also like, it's been a while since I've done Falling Sword, and dude, it is just so easy to just get the hell away from that. It felt so unimpactful.
Well, and that's where the double tank or offlane Johanna is really coming in, because Johanna as a shield based hero, because Iron Skin's Unstoppable is based on the shield still being up, she has counters, very, very heavy counters in the form of Varian and other sort of shield destruction talents in the game. There aren't a lot of shields left in this game.
Like, think about, hey, dude, what's the popular healer right now? Who's the popular healer in competitive?
Well, that'd be Rhaegar.
Who's the other popular healer? Because that's not who I was fishing for.
Is it Stukov?
Yeah, you know what Stukov does?
Hmm.
He goes, oh, you wanted to pop Iron Skin after Falling Sword. That's cute.
Yeah, there's that danger as well. I'm more talking about the issue that your shield will be broken if you're the main tank, if you use it for main tank activities. So Falling Sword as a main tank activity isn't particularly good, as you just sort of noted. And then Iron Skinning as a main tank activity isn't particularly good. But it's really, really good when you're the off tank, when you're the off lane coming in and sweeping in and being weird and stunning people randomly. And another tank is there like Muradin or someone to clean it up, maybe even an Uther. So Johanna's really, really good at this obscure thing now, but she's got her lane clear back. So it's an interesting ongoing thing. And it led to a lot of discussion about the future sort of philosophy of heroes. And of course, prompted people to have the discussion again of are reworks our future? We see Probius now, and Probius seems like a very successful rework, taking old assets and making them more viable. Or are we going to see heroes that we know well and we like reworked for content's sake, maybe not just rework for rework's sake?
Maybe an interesting chat to have with the devs. I would be very surprised if they were doing reworks for the sake of just freshening things up.
Yeah.
It might feel like the end goal to us on the outside, but I would imagine it comes from a place of something they've wanted to do.
I agree. There's a fundamental design flaw. I mean, it's also one of those things where we don't really know the personal aspect of it.
Yeah, we get dev comments, right? But those only go so deep.
Well, it doesn't tell that personal turmoil story that happens when you're watching CCL and you see someone go on a rampage and you go, oh no, I did that. That's my fault. I need to fix this. How can I fix it without root? And then the problem builds and builds and builds, and you eventually have to touch this and touch that. Not just like spaghetti code, but spaghetti balance. Because every time you change one aspect of a hero, you change another aspect. That's why we hear Mal'Ganis is so impossible to work on in some ways, because he heals based on everything he does. So you can't change one number without affecting others.
All good points. Yeah, I don't know. It's been interesting. I've been thinking a lot on like what I'd like the future of Heroes patches to be, and I think the answer is more of half the first half of this year, please, and less the second half.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's we've talked about how like clearly there's going to be a longer break between patches too. So it's like my desire, like I'm still at odds with like my desire for bigger, weirder changes, with the fear that if it's too weird, too problematic, it's going to be too long before it's reined in.
I think we're both in agreement that level 20 is a great place to impact the game. And you provide additional content beyond a rework in that way, because you're saying, can you do this? We're going to add a new late game tier unit to StarCraft. That means every game that goes with a Zerg Rush, you never got to see that thing. You increase the content and you're like, oh, I'm going to keep playing. I still haven't seen my level 20 ability yet. And I think it's a great way to motivate people throughout the entire game, not only to just play more, but also to participate to the very end, because at least you have that level 20 talent that could change everything.
Yeah, it's I like being excited about 20. Like it's fun. You're excited to get there, and it's pretty rare that you don't make it.
Yeah, it's quite rare.
It happens. It does. It definitely does happen. But yeah, it's an interesting thought. The more I think about it, the more I think Rhaegar is closer to perfect than I think like most of the conversation around Rhaegar would have you believe. Mm. Like I'm thinking about like overpowered heroes of the past from this year, and comparing it to Rhaegar, and it's like, yes, Rhaegar is overtuned, but I don't think it's as bad as other things we've seen. I think he's pretty damn close. I think we need to look at that damn totem.
Yeah, rein that in. And the problem in draft right now is that Rhaegar and Johanna are often receiving bans, or at least at the very Rhaegar. And it's leaving games very samey in that way, because Dehaka and Stukov then get through, and if not that, your Brightwings and stuff. So it, like many overpowered instances in the past, it exacerbated the previous issue because it's now letting those heroes through. So it's a big balance, it's a big old snowball, and it's rolling downhill right now. And I don't think it's anything that needs to emergency be stopped. Our devs are still very much on holiday and happy for them, but I'm curious to see what their first project back will be.
I'm still holding out hope for a little love back to Raynor. Rhaegar needs a nip. Didn't mean to do that, but that was good. And Stukov, I think, still needs to be reined in a tad. Overall, I think the game's in a pretty decent state. You know, despite my own, I feel personally attacked, but I think the game's in a good place.
Yes, yes, and we're coming up on that next NGS season as well, and the playoffs for CCL. So that's going to be here really soon too. So the new year is going to really kick off very fast for this game.
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting times, man. Dude, I'm gonna go to a LAN in Florida.
You are?
Yeah, you heard about the Chili Mountain Miami LAN tournament?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's happening in Miami, which is only a 3-hour drive for me. So I'm going to do it. I'm going.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I got my vaccine and gas in the tank. Let's go. I'm so friggin' stoked that it's happening. Not in my backyard, but, you know, close enough that I'm willing to make the drive.
Sure. Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's exciting times to be a Heroes of the Storm fan, I think. It's just not. A lot of it isn't coming from Blizzard, and that's, I think, it's still relatively new for us, which is ridiculous to say, because CCL has been going strong for a while now. But I think, you know, if you're, again, one of these, not a daily or a weekly player of the game, you know, you might still be thinking of, like, the good old days of HGC and all that. Right now it's cool, man. Well, we got some questions about that, so I don't want to go down that rabbit hole too deep. We'll talk about it here in a bit when we do our holiday mailbag, which is going to be a big chunk of today's episode, because it's the end of the year. The devs are on vacation. Nothing new is happening in the game. I just wanted to talk about how bored I am with Johanna.
Sure, sure. And my game is ruined because I'm using Waseda controls for my Cameron Total War Warhammer 2. So, you know, we've all got issues.
You know what my biggest issue is, Kyle? Jurassic World Evolution 2 is only like $5 off on the Steam sale.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of brutal.
I was like, I don't really have time for this, but I'll buy it since it's on sale. And then I saw how much it was on sale. I was like, you know what? I'll keep waiting because I'm probably.
Yeah, it's right up top, too. Like, Steam is like, you want this, don't you?
I do. I do. And I did put a bunch of hours into the old one, but I probably won't play it right now. So there's no damn reason to buy it, even though I loved the first one.
And Valheim put out another letter and they're like, hey, everybody, content's coming. I'm like, it was the holidays. Do it now.
No, if they can take all the time they want, I'm playing Final Fantasy. Wait until I'm in a lull in that game and then update Valheim, please. Thank you. Anyways. Oh, good God. In the chat room, Hula is watching and says, COVID is hurting now. Going to go rest. Hula, get better. Goodness gracious me. Stay safe out there. Hope you're feeling all right. It's a shame. You did a good job covering up, Hula. You were making me laugh in chat earlier. So your COVID is not coming across in text. Anyways, dude, we should get to the holiday mailbag. Before we do, we should also thank our patrons for their lovely support of this here program. The fact that there are this many of you still supporting us, you know, we've been doing this a while. It means the world to us, you know, especially this time of the year. We really, really appreciate it. So thank you, everybody, for another year of supporting Kyle and myself making Into the Nexus. And if you're listening and you're like, man, those two freaking dorks, they've been a part of my year. They brought a little happiness to me. I like what they're doing. They're keeping the hero's dream alive. I want to support them. Check out patreon.com/ITN because again, you don't need to go and become a producer. If you do, we really appreciate it. And we've got a new slot open, by the way, if you do want to go do that, but every bit helps from our dollar patrons all the way up to our producers. We can't thank you enough. And you are the reason that Into the Nexus is still going strong in 2022 after beginning during the tech alpha back in 2014. That's crazy when I think about that. So anyways, patreon.com/ITN. Go check it out if you want to support us. Get access to our patron-only Discord and join us for our monthly game nights. Thanks for the support, everybody. And now we're going to talk about your questions, what you want to talk about. You can send an email to itncast@gmail.com. Or again, if you're a patron, skip the inbox entirely. Drop us a message in the Discord. I've got it open right now, too. So if you're a patron hanging out, like hiding in there, you got a question, drop it in there. I'll see if I can add it to the list here. But we got a big, long list of heroes-related questions. Then we're going to cap this year off with some nice off-topic buffoonery. I hope you're ready for it, Kyle.
I'm ready.
Well, let's get it started. Mr. I'm Stuck wrote in and says, all right, Malfurion is a boring healer, but can bring a lot to the table. I would say he's a boring character. I don't find him to be the most boring healer, but anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay.
Nonetheless, I'm Stuck writes, his skill relies on making sure everyone on your team has a leaf over their head. It empowers so many of his other talents, including his heroic at 10. The problem he runs into, aside from his misnamed abilities, regrowth should be rejuvenation. I love that you're sneaking in this soapbox here, I'm Stuck, is that he is a great sustain healer, but a poor burst healer until 20 when regrowth finally gets its heal before providing a heal over time. My suggestion is that Tranquility provides 50% of the healing in a burst to allies in the area around him when cast, and then provides another 50% over 8 seconds to allies in the affected area while providing that 10 armor to anyone affected by regrowth. My thinking is that this would give him burst healing and have an impactful heroic at 10 that could turn around a fight while keeping the sustained healing theme intact going. Then at 20, I would fold the Life Bloom text into Tranquility and just provide another option at 20 to replace Life Bloom.
I do think that popping his heal is a little Stukov-y, but would be very interactive. Malfurion, of all of the heroes, I feel like doesn't have a aggressive option. Because what are you going to do? Moonfire people more? You're doing that anyway for healing. So when Anduin's ahead, you start, you know, breaking your position a little bit, trying to get some aggressive roots, maybe taking some auto attack talents and getting cute. Malfurion never really has that option. Malfurion reminds me the most of being bored in a dungeon in World of Warcraft. I have nothing to do except for put the heals on everybody and spamming abilities. It's not really a World of Warcraft thing. you're going to run out of mana. Your damage contribution is not that high, so why even bother? Here, you don't even have that option. You're just going to Moonfire more.
I guess that's fair. I don't play enough Malfurion, I think, is what it boils down to. I always love heroes that kind of have that option. It's like, my baked in healing is okay, but it'd be nice if I could grab a little bit more burst to 10. It's something Brightwing has access to. Rhaegar with Ancestral is a big one right now, although I'm taking it, but every time I get out of the game, I look at my healing numbers. I'm like, did I really need it? Because those numbers are pretty insane. With how much healing Chain Heal's now doing from yourself and from your totem. But I do like the ability to add more burst if I want a 10. So I am inclined to like this suggestion.
Yeah. I know the level 20 isn't the preferred of the pros, but that doesn't matter because in paper, it's supplying now that burst heal that you're after. So I absolutely understand why Mr. I'm Stuck is interested in that talent and getting it put across the various options here. I don't want there to be additional buffoonery in the background. Like, I don't think he should set up by the well a potted plant that he has to go water occasionally. But it would be rather druidy of him.
It's Malfurion. He should set out a sleeping bag and take a nap.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe like rework his mana so that he's more along the lines of Aprobius, where your mana is always coming and going, but you have this den, if you will, or the sleeping bag. Or maybe you just take a nap where you let the things tick for a bit, and that's how you get mana back. Chen is a great example of this. Someone who has to drink a little bit here and there in order to maintain his energy. Just something extra. Because when you're out of mana on Malfurion, what I feel like is a trap talent, the Innervate talent, is sitting right there, right when your scaling gets good enough that you don't need it in the first place. So you spend the early game wanting mana. You spend the late game never needing mana. And right at that sweet spot of where it's about to switch over, they're like, hey, you want to take a talent that won't matter in a level? And you go, well, yes, I do. And you mess it up. So I'm really agreeing with my own thought here. Get rid of his mana, make it some sort of mechanic where I can actively pursue the mana. And hey, if while I'm napping, regen does something else or does a burst heal or something along those lines. The main problem for me is just when everyone's dotted, it means the game is ahead and it's my game to lose. It's just not a thrilling place to be in.
I feel that. How the hell did Lunara end up as the one with a wisp?
That's a good question.
Feels like something Malfurion should have. And after all the stuff when you said he's like, oh, he could be like Probius. I'm like, he should have a wisp and you could like spec into it for like rejuvenating wisp, where if you're in the range of it, much like shields off of pylons, you're getting a little something, something for your trouble.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a result of Enchantress from Dota and a desire to be different. Enchantress is a dryad, is Lunara, basically, and summons wisps that swirl about her and heal her, as well as people in the area if there's spare healing to be done. I mean, that was maybe the 2017 ability. It's been a while. But the Huntress was the one who would put a wisp over trees and sort of leave it there until the tree was destroyed in Warcraft 3. So I have no good answer as to why Lunara got the wisp.
Fair. Thank you, Kissy Bears. Chad writes in and says, I haven't found the right buzzword for this. Reverse buff, simple buff, ham-fisted buff, I don't know. But for example, I'd like to see changes like this. Thrall. Keep him exactly how he is now, moldy talents and all. 10% health increase. Thrall isn't a bad hero, but he just doesn't really shine in anything. Perhaps being a little more durable would make him more viable. Chad also gave an Alexstrasza example of Abundance essentially tells the team, hey, everyone, they need to stand here. Hello. Activate time decreased from 3 to 2 seconds. No other changes.
Okay. I think these are nice. These are nice. Is it broken? No, neither one of them. Is it far enough to be, you know, hot? Nah. These can be way hotter.
If everything needs to be exciting, I would point to the last patch as an example of apparently they don't.
Would it be so much to make Alex Straza's heel not visible to the enemy team? Like, there's a healer walking around. Her name's Alex Straza. She puts her arms in the air because she has an animation for this. Everyone stands in one area. Like, Ana grenades are going to hit the area anyway. Ooh. Are we really giving away the goose? Ooh.
You solved it. Do it. Oh my God. Like, freaking do it. What is the delay on flame strike?
1 second.
1 second. So two, it still wouldn't really matter.
0.5?
Flame strike, where you at? After 1 second. Yep. Okay. So 2 seconds, Kael'thas still has time to react.
Yeah. And if when Garrosh stops wandering around the front line and goes and stands by an ally, like it's a very clear telegraph. And I don't think the enemy needs to see that. Thrall, I've got a vested interest in. This is a hard one for me because I'm just like, just give him a lane clear. And I know that would make him completely amazing. However, there's a little hero called Zul in the game at the moment. And there is a combo where you run Zul, Stukov, Nazebo. So Zul is the main tank in this. He runs forward. He puts on a bone prison. Stukov hands the bone prison. And while the bone prison's going, you put a zombie wall around him. So they can't break the zombies with spells because they're silenced by the Stukov, and you basically have a heroic done with three basic abilities.
I mean, still more counterplay than Junkrat traps, but I'm picking up what you're laying down.
True. Thrall can supply that route, but it's not as telegraphed. It's not as viable in the situation. And ultimately, it doesn't have the lane clear of Zul. So maybe we should look to Zul for Thrall to get that lane clear, and maybe when Fury's splashing, that's a little dirty. It's really off base. It's off flavor for Wind Fury to supply a splash.
Yeah, but I always kind of thought that it would be interesting if Wolf was more like Lunar Flare, where instead of traveling in a line where it dissipates on first hero hit, that it, like, imagine the wolf jumped. So the targeting reticule would be a circle, or maybe, you know, like a distant square or a rectangle instead of a line emanating out from Thrall's body. Cause the application of it and the value proposition would shoot up so much higher if you could just, go send it past the front line consistently.
I mean, we can do anything we want with the wolf. The wolf was a summon in Warcraft 3. And if you're going to defend the fact that it's now a straight line skill shot route, it's all made up anyway. Like, we're not dealing in the lore here anymore. So yeah, it could be a skill shot. It could be like you summon two wolves by you visually and they cleave and help you cleave the lane just like Zul. And yeah, he loses the route there. So maybe that's an issue. But there are plenty of ways to augment abilities and keep them visually thematic without even, worrying about what they did in previous games.
Yeah. It's just a thought. But back to Chad's kind of idea here about just, can we have patches where there's just kind of a single change to a hero? Like, I'd be down for it. Like, if I saw a patch where the only change was Thrall has 10% more health now, I'm trying Thrall immediately. Like, I think that's enough to make me excited. And while I like your idea better about just making Alex Straza's heal not visible to the enemy, going from 3 to 2 seconds, I think that's exciting sounding.
There has to be some sort of packaging. This is me, like, not knowing code at all or how games are made. But, there has to be a sort of, like, you got all the Christmas letters together and you're going to send them in one big go kind of business. No one writes one Christmas letter, seals it up, and then takes it out to the mailbox and goes, okay, there's grandma. next, grandma, and goes back inside through the snow and writes back down, you know, there has to be a reason why they want to bunch all these balance patches together. I agree with you. I think that card games have really introduced a more fluid way of doing this sort of thing. You just log in one day, Magic the Gathering, Hearthstone, at least for me, who doesn't kind of look into the horizon with those games. I just log in, and it's like, now banned and play. I'm like, okay, fine. what was the story there? I don't know what's going on, but you didn't like my food deck and it had to go in Magic the Gathering. Okay.
It's fine. I'm just saying, like, what you're putting down here, Chad, I'm picking it up. I'm down for this. I'm down for if what you put as simple reworks at the end of your email here, I'm all for it. I wouldn't be instantly bummed because there's only one change, and we've had damn near close to like a single change. We've had really, really minor changes over many patches, and I'm always for them. It's just that usually when it's like only a few changes, it's like, we changed three talents no one's picking. And I'm just like, okay.
Maybe I see what you mean.
Impactful. You know, and haven't we've had patches where it's like just been like a health adjustment?
Right, in the list, but I see what Chad's saying too with the simple idea. I was more taking this in the is it busted, is it sexy kind of idea of things. I really like the idea that it's just like we as devs had a thought and we just want to change it and see what happens. And we're not concerned what 10% health would mean to Spell Shield and all these other talents down the line. We're just going to do this one thing and we're going to give it a moment in the sun.
All right. And MNC Dover wrote in and says, I was listening to the recent ITN podcast talking about Probe not feeling very thematic to StarCraft. And I agree. Goes on to say, I feel that Nova is the same as well. So I whipped up a rework for her that I would love to have you two put through the exciting and overpowered filter. And this is very long. So I only wanted to focus on one thing here. If there's another thing that piqued your interest, Kyle, by all means, pull it out. But I wanted to talk about Dover's suggestion for how to change permanent cloak, where Dover said it should they would change it to personal cloak, and that it would be an activatable to gain stealth on a 3-second cooldown, and then you get mana 25 mana plus 2 mana per second while moving. And I think this is really cool.
I assume that's the cost. It's costing you mana to move around.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that's fair. I read that wrong. Yeah, that makes way more sense. I like that quite a bit. And I almost want to put a cap. Like, once you spend, like, X mana, it turns off again. Like, so you can't just stay stealth the whole time. Because Dover pointing to the fact that, you don't think Probe is systematic to StarCraft. Well, what about Nova? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. They don't just stay cloaked the whole time because it consumes energy. So you end up like with these late game Terran armies if they went ghosts, where the ghosts are just fully visible, just taking shots.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the idea of maybe beefing Nova up a little bit more and making her more a presence of the team fight with, like, you know, the option for intentional moments of sneakiness as opposed to constant moments of sneakiness.
It's interesting because there are so many different versions of Nova in my mind. There's the more ghost version. There's the co-op commander version, which is very much based on the units around you and augmenting them. And then there's the never ever released StarCraft Ghost version that looked a lot like Splinter Cell, where you sort of had a range of abilities and need to worry about the puddles on the ground to use your shock bullets to knock out the guards and go hide them in a locker kind of business, which is also very fun. But I agree that the cloaking aspect of Nova is leaving her a one trick pony. And I would like to see her take on something more assassin-based and be able to be that carry for the team. I think D.Va might have eaten her lunch a little bit. I love the idea of the sniper rifle into pistol. kind of style. I don't think Nova's really the shotgun type, though that's certainly my favorite when I get in something like Apex Legends and I suck at it. But still, I'm like, long range, short range, long range, short range. This must be great. This is how I'll live my life.
That's, yeah, that's what I used to do in like old or OG Modern Warfare 2. I think we're going to have a Modern Warfare 2 coming up next year. But that was always, if I was sniping, my secondary was always a shoddy because, you know, it was a claymore and a shotgun because jerkwads would always try and sneak up on you.
It seems like a good strategy to cover all your bases, and having something to switch off of with your sniper rifle is a very fun part of playing XCOM, for instance, where they get a big old like magnum pistol kind of, you know, it only fires one shot. You can Talon into an XCOM. It's a great game. Go check it out.
I recently, well, not too recently, but I got back into it. It's such a good game, man. It's so freaking
good. It is. Two with War of the Chosen add-on. Just, yeah, so good, so good. Anyway, the idea of spending mana while cloaking, I think, continues to push her into that territory, and we can give her more power, but we would end up again at this burst assassin, which isn't necessarily bad. What I'm interested to see is, can we get her to be that Zeratul, that Sammy, or maybe even a Genji type that goes and gets out and then is spent, like cleans up the back line when they're trying to get away. But that's kind of their job. That's a place you can live. But there's another world where Nova gets to just have all these various tools on her tool belt, like Splinter Cell, but can also carry a team like a Vala can.
I would be excited. The thought of a more visible Nova, more active team fight Nova is exciting to me. Even though over the years, my entire history with Heroes of the Storm has just been an exercise in chipping the ice off of my heart piece by piece when it comes to Nova. I kind of like Nova now, but also there's some cool ideas here. And I think the cloak one is really interesting.
Yeah, and I love EMP rounds that they included, the irradiate. Just making her have what feels like the Batman tool belt really gives me that that covert ops feel that I think I'm going for. We don't need little race cars or shields or anything like that. Things have gone too far in Call of Duty, but you know, there is a place for that sort of element, and I really like it. By the way, if you want to see the full rework that has been written up here, you can always check out our show notes.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's get to the holiday Q&A. I'm going to say this might be more rapid fire style, but it probably won't. I'm lying to you. All right, we got a couple HOTS related questions from Twitter before we move into off topic questions. And again, if you are a patron, you're watching live, got the Discord right there. So if you want to drop a question in, drop it in. Can be off topic, can be HOTS related. It's all good. But Lodvar tweeted at us and says, do you think we've seen the last hero and that's it? And that it's all reworks and balance changes from now on? Or do you think there's still a hero or two to come? I think there's still a hero or two to come.
It's a tough question. I think the gaming sphere is in an extremely bizarre state. And if you've been keeping up on the news, Activision Blizzard is in a bizarre state. I would like to see them, like they did with the skins, outsource the pieces they need to create heroes. And I think that can be done. And I don't think it requires more passion or development logistics than they currently have. I bet there is a lot of assets left, half done, ideas explored, kits even ready, that could be transformed. I don't think there's another hero, though, unless we see a fundamental change in how they support their classics games. And I think Warcraft 3 is still needing some fixing, too. So when we see Warcraft 3 kind of gets its love, I would expect heroes to be on the horizon as well.
Interesting. I have such open disdain for Warcraft 3 as a garbage product that I'm just like, why bother?
That's fair, too. It's a wound that still hurts as such a classic, as such a pillar of gaming that I would love to see that interacted with and fixed up. But I don't have a lot of faith there. I do think Heroes is an exceedingly competent and amazing game, though. And it's being treated alongside a game that, in, you know, maybe as you put it, should be left to rot a bit.
Take it behind the shed.
End it. End the Warcraft 3 lineage.
You messed up. Let it die. That's where I'm at on that. But now I'm pretty sure there's a few more Heroes. I think part of the reason their communication is terrible now is they probably said too much in the past when they were like, oh, we still have tons of Heroes. It's like, that's nice. Are we ever actually going to see them? It's kind of where I'm at now. I'm a big grump on that at this point. I'm very grumpy about the game at the moment, and it all just comes to like complete lack of expectations. I don't know what to expect because they won't talk to us, and that sucks.
What a weird thing. I've constantly over the last what are we at now? At least 6 months, if not more, said I don't believe it. Well, actually, I do, but I still would not. I'd like to not believe it, and that's very much the state I'm in right now. However, alongside it, we have an amazing grassroots community, an amazing game, and just an overall excited and passionate community. So, in some ways, it's like, but do we need a new hero to foster that more?
I don't. I think there's, you know, probably, you know, a handful that are, you know, functional or in a testing phase is what I believe because of how many heroes they've said in the past were still in the wings. So I have to imagine certain of those are, you know, built up and have kits. So like, I imagine there's more, but I also to your hypothetical, no, I don't. I mean, I'm still playing this game a year with no new hero. It's fine. And the last hero was Hogger. I hate Hogger.
Yeah, and the next one wouldn't necessarily be for Lodvar or be for me. And we all might hate it, or it might be obscure as well. So who knows? We've all got a lot of hopes for things still sitting in the wings. For my own personal hopes, of course, I'd love to see new heroes. But as for the health of the game, not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like a minute, it was like a dig. Is I don't think it's a bad thing. But what I mean with Hogger is like, Hogger is not for me, and I'm fine with that. There's a lot of heroes in this game that are not for me, and it just so happens the last one was not for me. My relationship with Heroes of the Storm is very much like my relationship with Green Day. The last album was freaking terrible, and I still love them dearly.
Yeah. My relationship with Heroes is like listening to my metal soundtrack in front of my son. He said it was cool the other day, and that's all that mattered.
God, I can't wait. I can't wait till your kid starts having musical opinions.
Oh, yeah. No, he's going to be like, oh, that glory hammer, that's dad music. Weird.
Yep. Yep, it's all right, Kyle. Avril Lavigne has a new album coming out. We're all about to be saved.
Cool.
I heard a song off of it, actually. It sounded pretty good. Stoked for Avril.
Okay.
Sounds like old school Avril in a good way. That doesn't sound like you're old now trying to recapture your youth. It works. Huge Murloc writes in, Kyle, and says, what's your opinion on the uprise of the HOTS esports scene? We had a LAN event last summer and two more scheduled for this summer. Do you believe Blizzard will ever do something like HGC again? I think these are in two kind of camps here because the lands are not Blizzard run. We've got a land this February. We got a land coming up. It's still technically winter for the Chili Mountain Miami land. So yeah.
I am very confused by Blizzard's esports strategy at the moment, and I think everyone involved in the Overwatch League is too. If you ever want to like go find old trailers or watch some old patch content from World of Warcraft, you know, you might be like, oh man, what was that trailer they originally put out for Warlords of Draenor or something like that? You will have to scroll through every single esports match that ever happened for World of Warcraft. And each has about 4,000 views, and it's confusing, and you wonder what the heck's going on. And
most people don't watch on VOD, though, right? Like
maybe.
I mean,
or do they watch live?
I have always consumed via VOD, but still to this day, my favorite esport is StarCraft 2, and my favorite one is GSL in Korea. So I ain't watching that shit live. So, like, I've always thought I was a weirdo that I preferred watching VODs.
I like it because I like watching the drafts at double speed because I want to get to the game, but I like the information.
I'm with you there. I mean, again, I prefer watching VODs as well. It's just I always kind of thought I was in the minority with that. But I mean, how far down the rabbit hole of Blizzard Esports is on fire and they don't really have a clue what they're doing? Do we want to go?
I mean, that's a little bit of where I'm going. I'm not trying to trash anybody's personal hobbies or enjoyment of Warcraft, World of Warcraft esports or anything like that.
This is me like speaking quickly and flippantly. Like the one of the major teams across all games that were hit during those big layoffs a few years ago was esports. Like it was just gutted. So I don't mean to disparage esports employees when I say like, I don't know what they're doing. I'm kind of talking about Blizzard as a company and its support of esports as a corporate arm. I think it's poorly conceived and poorly executed. I think when you look at Blizzard's esports team from the outside looking, and this is based on zero inside information, I think it is just woefully under-supported and underfunded.
Esports is of two minds. You've got entrepreneurship where people want to plan events, make money, host big tournaments with big prize pools to draw eyeballs, to sell to advertisers. It is a money-making thing. It's why we see people in Las Vegas, poker champs, and all this sort of thing often fund esports arenas. Very, very similar. Golf people, you know, same idea. Advertisers want eyeballs. You create an event that creates eyeballs. It's a win-win for everybody. Everyone makes money kind of deal. That's esports as a non-consumer. And then you've got Riot Esports, which is a loss leader, but an advertisement vessel and perhaps a vessel of goodwill. I can't exactly speak to their goals there, but they've made a ton of games in the background and continue to make products that then pipe back into their game. So they create this cycle. Same with Fortnite sort of in-game events and its buzz. Blizzard doesn't create games right now. And they're not creating assets for the games that they're going to make esports of. So esports has no purpose for them. Does it have a purpose for us as enjoyers? Well, hell yes. And it's very, very enjoyable to watch. And as a company that were to host an esports event, there is purpose there to create this buzz, create the eyeballs, and make money for themselves. So yeah. I do not see a world where non-juggernauts host their own in-house esports anymore. And I think that Valve has kind of lost its purpose in its esport with Dota. And I think Riot's the only one doing it correctly with my limited knowledge. I don't know a lot of esports. I'm not really sure what Rocket League's up to, for instance.
My understanding is very healthy, but I'm not sure. I don't follow it closely.
I don't know kind of the inner workings, who's hosting what, how much money Rocket League LLC puts out or whatever the parent company is. I don't really know that environment.
Yeah. But I try to temper my own like feelings on the matter because like after HEC, I don't trust Blizzard with esports anymore. And after Hearthstone, because Hearthstone got shipped off to YouTube where no one watches it anymore. As a part of that Overwatch deal. And if unverified articles are to be believed, like Hearthstone was just a pack in because all YouTube cared about was Overwatch. Mm. And Hearthstone was just thrown in to sweeten the deal. And I believe that, especially after seeing, learning a lot more about Activision Blizzard's corporate dealings over the past few years. So I just don't trust them with esports anymore, but I try and temper that too, because I think I also like, I am definitely old man on my porch when it comes to esports. Like the most I've enjoyed esports was like the burgeoning days. Like we got into it pre Twitch with Wings of Liberty. And that was just so much fun. You know, there were definitely like seedy people and grifters just making kids sign contracts they shouldn't have been signing. But like, and like, you can't, I don't want to hand wave that away, but like on the other side, on the good side of that coin is like good grassroots events like DreamHack and whatnot that are still going, and I still trust to be there, and I still trust to celebrate competition and keep the competition moving, because they're not directly tied to the studio that's making the game.
Yeah. And in that way, you know, I, like many of our streaming services, perhaps the most comfortable I was with esports was when GOMTV was like, will you pay for my service? And I was like, yes, please. I would like to watch your videos. I will pay for your service. And we had this one-to-one customer reaction, interaction that wasn't fueled by Mountain Dew, for instance. It was
right. It was fueled by Hot 6.
Yeah, well, it was fueled by, yeah, they still got advertisers, right? But there, you know, I was paying for a product that I then received. And that felt very personal. And I had a very strong connection with those games when I was watching them.
Yeah, I did too. So, yeah, we've talked about this before, so I don't want to rehash it too much. But like where I'm at is like, I think heroes, competitive heroes, I look at the landscape now as a net gain. I'm really happy where it's at. I really like what Heroes Hearth is doing, and I trust them with the product. I trust them pretty early too, I should say, and now I feel that trust was rewarded, because here they are still going strong.
Well, and just kind of the story of it, of basically what became Wisdom after HGC basically going, fine, I'll make it myself. And we went, okay, go for it. All right. And then they did it.
And they did
put it together.
Yeah, they really
did. In a
measured
way, with the celebrity clash in the fight nights, like slowly built over time something that the audience enjoyed.
And let's be honest, like I'm here casting maximum shade at corporate Blizzard. But team based Blizzard, the developers that are actually making this game, they deserve credit too, because they have kept this game injected with life. Is it what it was like during HGC? No, we're not getting multiple heroes a year. We're not getting like patches every 3 weeks, but we were still getting regular patches. It still overtakes other Blizzard games in terms of how often it is updated. Like over like post HGC, from then to now, heading into 2022, Heroes of the Storm is still a supported game. And so I think it's the combo of that. It's the combo of the community itself and entities like Heroes Hearth doing the work to make a competitive scene, but also what I am now imagining is a ragtag group of Blizzard Resistance developers keeping a game alive that it seems like the corporation has no interest in.
And I don't think this corporation will have interest until they have other games to sell us. And then there might possibly be a world where a form of points-based, kind of like we saw with StarCraft, kind of comes back around into a climax at some sort of Blizzard-like event. But the cycle has to feed back to itself. And chat's absolutely right. Like, you have things like the International, which are money-making Battle Pass products, which is a very different model than what Riot's having. Right now, I would say Riot is doing what Blizzard wanted to do with its esport, which is advertise their own games and create revenue.
Well put. Good question, Huge Murloc. I like it. I like talking about this stuff. All right, dude, you ready to get weird?
Let's do that.
Let's get to these off-topic questions. It's the end of the year. Let's have a little fun outside of the usual fun of talking heroes. But let's get to this. So Dom Scythe wanted to know what our current favorite movie is of all time, and for us to defend ourselves. And then Valk was like, maybe they should expand that to like top three or top five, because it's hard to narrow it down.
It's changed a lot as I've grown older.
Mine has just always been a battle of like it's definitely like Star Wars or Indiana Jones or Back to the Future. And it's like, my life is just trilogies, like these things that I truly love, that I truly can't imagine living without. And it's really hard for me to like pick one. I can't pick one Star Wars. I probably watch Return of the Jedi the most. I don't think it's the best movie, but it's the one I like watching the most.
Yeah. My answer for now, you know, as I currently am, is Aliens. Alien 2.
Ah, damn,
I think that is one of the finest crafted movies with the Marines and the aliens, and it's basically StarCraft. But then you have like this journey of a mother versus a queen alien mother and the battling powers of Mother Ripley, a badass on the elevator as it goes down, duct taping the flamethrower to the pulse rifle, like beat for beat. That journey of that movie is so exquisite.
James Cameron, man. Dude, every time, and I probably only watch this maybe once every 4 years, every time I watch Terminator 2, I am more impressed than the last time I watched it. Yeah. It gets better every time I watch it. It is such a perfect action film. Yeah, some of the effects don't hold up as well, but it's a product of its time. And mm-hmm. viewed through that lens, it is a perfect action film. It's so good. Aliens. James Cameron knows how to make a movie. Even Titanic is freaking. Preteen girls ruined that movie for me. But
Recorder class ruined that movie. I had to play the song over and over again.
I can play it on a guitar. I could.
Yeah,
I could. I'm not going to
do
it.
Who can't?
Yeah.
Who grew up in our series? What a great film.
I was not excited for Book of Boba Fett. I wasn't really hyped for it. I love Boba Fett as much as the next person. One of my favorite action figures when I was a kid. I really questioned using that character as a lead in anything. It's Boba Fett. He's cooler when we know less about him. But I watched the premiere episode last night and I tweeted this, man. Damn it, I really just love Star Wars. It's like the one thing I'm not cynical about. I have barely any cynicism for it. I will sit here and yell about how bad Rise of Skywalker is until the cows come home. But for like, God, I was just like, all right, whatever. It's Boba Fett. It's Star Wars. I got to watch it. And I turned it on and man, I just like warm fuzzies. Like it does make me feel like a kid. And so like my answer will always be Star Wars. I can't pick one. I really can't.
That's great.
I like most Star Wars movies. I would say the only ones like I have open disdain for is episode 1, 2, and 9. Like I kind of love everything else.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Like it's just something that just brings me joy and really does make me feel like a kid again. So like my answer is always Star Wars. That's it. Like, that's why, like, it's just, damn, I love that world. I love the sounds. I love the music. I love just looking at, people are like, they're going back to Tatooine again. I'm like, cool, do it. I just want to look at this desert. I'm in for it. Let's go. But yeah, Aliens is a good damn answer. I watched it with my dad a lot at way too young of an age. Yeah.
That's when I saw Terminator, so it always kind of messes with me a bit. But
yeah, my dad hates fiction. There's a very few handful of fictitious based movies that he likes, and Alien and Aliens are one of them. Terminator's another one, specifically two. He doesn't really like the first one, and neither do I. I think it's boring as hell.
It is.
Predator. Predator's another big one.
Predator's really good, yeah.
That was one I distinctly remember, like, it was, we'd seen Terminator together, we'd seen Aliens together, and, like, we were at a Blockbuster, and I was like, can we rent Predator? He's like, oh, man, I haven't seen that forever. Yeah, let's do it. And we're, like, watching it at home, and he's like, 5 minutes into it, he goes, oh, this is a lot more vulgar than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
That has some truly foul language. Truly foul. But, yeah, that's some good stuff. I'm not going to do a top five. There's so many movies in Star Wars. That's my answer. What's really close for you besides Aliens?
Oh, really close. I mean, Indiana Jones, the first one is just that one's like going back. There's movies I don't need to see anymore. But Aliens is because of James Cameron, is a complicated enough movie that when you watch it, you might notice something new and go, ooh, I didn't really get that as a kid. Or, oh, that's a really cool touch. Look at that. Look at that journey of motherhood, you know, as I'm older now. Ghostbusters is a movie I never have to see again, but I love immensely.
That's another one I watch probably every 4 years, like, because of that fact. I'm with you there. It's like, I remember a lot of the beats. I remember a lot of the jokes. So much like kind of like Terminator 2, I don't need to watch it every year.
Yeah.
Star Wars, I do a rewatch like every 2 years. Although now there's so many of them, I've started kind of just like, I feel like watching this one Star Wars movie and I'll just pop that in. I don't think I haven't done a full Star Wars rewatch since the lead up to Rise of Skywalker. I watched everything all the way up through. And it was so much fun until I saw Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Disco Biscuit wants to know, we've told this story before. We can revisit it. How did you two meet? And does Kyle also love Green Day? you don't love Green Day.
No,
I believe you told me multiple times that you don't like Billy Joe's voice.
It's a little whiny for me. Yeah.
Well, he just wants to know if you have the time to listen to him whine, Kyle.
And also the American Idiot thing was just so overplayed for me. It was destroyed on release by that. It's also a time period where I'm like, oh, that Kyle, oof, max awkwardness, high school, like just not a happy time to revisit.
Who wasn't, though?
It's true, but some had artificial confidence. You know, maybe they were propped up. Maybe, you know, every day they came home, they were told how they were amazing they were by grandma. Who knows? But some kids seemed like they had it together, and I'm sure we were all screaming inside.
Yes. I had a good time in high school because I had such a terrible time up to 8th grade. I was definitely like the picked on kid. And then high school was like new school, fresh start. And it was a lot better. It was like a harsh positive change compared to what came before it. But I can get that. But we met in college. You were a roommate of our mutual friend, Brian, who you hear his music every week on the outro. That is music by Brian. He also did the Angry Chicken intro. That's how y'all know him. He does a lot of other stuff, but that's how listeners are aware of him. but yeah, I've known Brian since I was like 3 years old. We met in preschool. He was one of the few people that did not pick on me. And you lived with him in college. And so he popped by the place I was living at during our college years one Thanksgiving, and you had tagged along.
Mm-hmm.
You were hanging out with Brian. I think he was still driving his like first gen Ford Focus then. And you showed up, we were hanging out talking. And I think you had just pulled an all nighter doing midterms or whatever. And yep. You fell asleep on my floor.
Mm-hmm.
So that
good introduction there.
That was it. That was it. But I think we exchanged battle nets or something. Cause like after graduation, which was, you know, 9 months later or something, we started playing games together, and eventually that led to, doing a StarCraft podcast.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the funny part of our story is that when we first met, we said about three words to each other and then you went to bed.
Yep. Right there on your floor. Right where I was sitting.
Yep. And then Brian and I stayed up catching up and playing Lost Planet on the 360.
Which was a little loud, I will say. It did wake me up a few times, but I did ace those midterms, so I was pretty proud.
That's good. That's good. I didn't know you that well, so I didn't really care if I was disturbing you. So,
well, Southern Florida puts me to sleep. The heat, the humidity, the sun's always like right at the eyeball angle. You're kind of like blind anywhere. You're just like, I'm just going to close my eyes for a bit.
You're that meme of the guy doing the squinty eye wake up.
Yeah, Bruce Willis face.
Is that Bruce Willis? That's not Bruce Willis.
No. But, you know, that's how
he looks.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt pretended to be Bruce Willis.
You're right.
I don't know why, but it worked. Like, he like squinted and like kind of looked shocked half the time. And for some reason, that was Bruce Willis' face. I wouldn't say that Bruce Willis does that face. But when Joseph Gordon-Levitt was pretending to be Bruce Willis, it worked.
Didn't think about that until you just said it. But yeah. All right. Zatoichi says, Kyle addresses you directly. You can pick one comedy movie and it is going to be your son's sense of humor going into adulthood. What movie do you pick? And don't get hung up on age, because you could watch it at whatever age.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's important.
This is a weird question and I love it.
It is a really, really good question. I think that the first few seasons of SpongeBob are phenomenally written, particularly the episode in the cardboard box. It's very Leslie Nielsen, Airplane. You know, it's an air of slapstick that I just find hilarious. And if I can share those laughs with my son, oh man, I'm really looking forward to that. I think Mel Brooks also, you know, has it going on. Mm. But I'm dating myself here with my movie choices.
I mean, Mel Brooks is before our time. So you're just referencing something you enjoyed that was old when you watched it the first time.
That's fair. And I enjoyed it with my dad. So the dad, like pass on thing, you know, there's an element of tear in my eye there. So, you know.
That's like old Eddie Murphy for me.
Hmm.
My dad really liked any of like OG SNL was like my dad's jam. So Blues Brothers, Trading Places. What's the other big Eddie Murphy one? Coming to America.
Yeah.
Those were like my dad could not wait until I was like a young teen to just like, all right, here we go. comedy movies with swearing. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big one for me. And I think it's why I still really enjoy like kind of mean insult based comedy. Like I talk shit with and to my friends a lot. There's a lot of ball busting. I'm still very much cut from that cloth. I find ball busting hilarious.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it very much is born out of watching a lot of OG SNL stuff growing up.
Well, and I will say, you know, credit to your comedy. You also have a great sense of if things go too far, it's just like, dude, and like, oh, sorry. Oh, you're good. I'm good. Okay. Then we go right back to it. Like, it's not, there is no point where it turns mean. And I think that's a wonderful part of your sense of humor.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know we were getting this deep, but
yeah,
interesting. That's, I never thought of that as a trait, but good to know. I'm gonna change Discord servers real fast because we're getting a little robot-y. All right, we can hear you again.
it's what people sometimes refer to as the lovable a-hole, but you've actually got the lovable part.
Nice.
Well, that's, those people are just awful people, and you know you should assess them as such. But
that is how I describe it, Bill Murray. So I will take that as a compliment.
Okay, there you go.
All right, Dax wrote in and says, I love sandwich discussion. What is your go-to sandwich? What's the best sandwich you ever had? If there would be a sandwich named after you, what would be on it?
Ooh, oh, it's definitely roast beef.
Yeah, bloody rare ass roast beef. Like if I'm given any option, that's what I go to.
But it's got to have like a flavorful cheese. Like provolone's decent, but we're not getting that on roast beef. Like this cheese has to stand out. It is part of the mixture.
I'm the other way around. I want the roast beef to be the star. So I like a mild, mild cheese because I like rare ass salty roast beef. Mm. And I want that to be the star. I want the meat to be the star. And I want the cheese to just like remind me that dairy is involved and then get out of the way for whatever bread we're working with.
Excellent.
Which my favorite sandwich locally that does roast beef, it is just a butt ton, like a New York deli amount of rare ass roast beef, provolone on a Kaiser roll with, they make a house-made jalapeno mayonnaise that is legitimately hot and I love it.
Oh, that is, that, you know, I need to look it up. It's been a while since I've been to Chicago.
I just keep wanting to sing Stained because you keep saying it's been a while today.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a sandwich place that has like a train on it. But anyway.
Yeah. Best sandwich I ever had. That's actually hard to answer. That's difficult. Are you Googling in the background? Or are you thinking? I hear typing, but you're looking off to the sky.
I'm Googling. So when I was in college in Tallahassee, Florida, there was a unique thing about 2004 in that nobody cared if any image was ever licensed. So like hair cutter places would have pictures of Final Fantasy characters in the window. And this particular place had a picture of Donkey Kong as their mascot. But they made really amazing sandwiches. And I have no idea if that place still exists, if they lost the rights as they should have to Donkey Kong. but yeah, it's like there was a gorilla and he made sandwiches, and in some of the imagery, he was Donkey Kong and some of it was King Kong. They didn't really care. As long as the gorilla was smiling, they were happy.
That's great. That's great. I think pretty recently there's a local Italian deli I go to a lot. And they do hoagies, and they have a hoagie. What the hell? I think it's called the Midnight Special. It doesn't matter what it's called. It's a breaded chicken cutlet with peppers that they like lightly braise in like a sweet vinegar, and then house made fresh mozzarella.
Oh,
but
oh
the bread they get is like God tier, but it's from a local bakery, and the freshness of the bread and the chicken varies. So I think I've had the best sandwich more than once, and it's any day I go, and both the bread and the chicken were clearly like made that day. Because they're like an Italian deli where they've got a lot of the food behind the glass case, and they'll go reheat it for you if you order there. But a lot of people bring stuff home. So they got the chicken cutlet there, and it's like, you know, made earlier, so it's cold, and they'll reheat it and put it on. But oh my God, dude, having that with like super crusty ass hoagie, because it's really crusty bread they have there. I love it when my mouth hurts a little bit after a sandwich.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, you get some cuts from that cheese on top, and yeah.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. So yeah, that's very recently I went, and the stuff was like clearly fresh out of the oven. Everything. I was just like, this is a religious experience.
I think there's one thing we can motivate people here, because they can't necessarily go find King Kong's Deli or whoever it was. Just stop going to Subway. All right, just go buy. Just go buy some ramen, just like make it through the night, whatever you can do, but just don't treat yourself that way.
I truly think Subway is a crime.
You didn't know any better, and that's okay at a time.
Sometimes, you know, you're in a hurry, man. Like, you still sometimes got to pop into one, in which case I get a flatbread because their bread is just so weird and not real.
Yeah, I don't think it is real bread.
It's very strange. It's very strange. What would be on your signature sandwich?
So we got roast beef. I really like cucumbers. You know, maybe it's part of that aspect of I don't want anyone eating my pizza, so I fell in love with pineapple. Wow. I like the satisfying crunch, but I'm also disturbed that I like it because it doesn't seem like something enjoyable.
Katie loves them. I think they're disgusting. They're the sandwich ruiner. They're too perfumey and slimy.
Mm. I do like the hot peppers if I feel like punishing myself, sometimes comes up.
Yep, I'm into that.
It's an option. Like, you can check the box there if you would like that. But otherwise, you know, you got your oils, and you know, I want it a little slimy. You got to eat it kind of fast because it's going to ruin the bread, and you know, the non-crunchy part.
You know, I know I went off about roast beef, but if I had a sandwich named after myself, I would just want it to just be an oven-baked Italian. A hot Italian with melty cheese makes me happy. And it was my favorite thing to get in high school at a local pizza place that is gone now, and I miss it like crazy.
Okay.
That's my answer. That's my answer. All right. Valk wants to know. It's another sandwich question. I'm done with sandwich questions. We'll skip this one. I meant to redact this one. Valk wants to know what the most adventurous sandwich is. I really don't know. I usually order things I know I'll like.
Yeah, well, that's a sandwich. Yeah, but what?
Do you have any adventurous food you've tried?
Well, yeah, but there's adventurous food, but like a sandwich is like a comfort item. I don't think I've had carrots on a sandwich before, but that's a Vietnamese sub, and that's because I want that.
Oh, I love banh mi.
I don't go to, exactly. I don't go get a sandwich when I don't know what I want. And then I get there and I'm like, calamari sandwich. All right. Like, let's try this out.
Yep. Yeah. Sandwich wise, I got nothing. I got no answer for that. De La Soak wants to know what the most underrated cocktail is.
Can't help you here.
I'm going to go with pina colada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're newer into being a cocktail nerd, tiki in general gets overlooked, and things that you're used to seeing come out of Slurpee machines at like a place like Daiquiri Deck or what's the other one? Here it's Daiquiri Deck. There's another one that's a little more worldwide. I don't know, like a Senor Frogs or something. You tend to forget about it. But a really, really well put together pina colada, I think, is a world-class cocktail.
All right.
One of the best things I had when I went to New York back in, I think it was 2018, we went just to go visit some of these cocktail bars that we learned how to make drinks from. One of the best things I had was a pina colada. It was one of the best things I had on that trip. And I wouldn't have thought, I'm going to go to New York and get a pina colada and it's going to change my life.
It's a coconut one, right? Like coconutty?
Pineapple and coconut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross.
Do you not like coconut or do you not like pineapple?
I don't like coconut. No.
Okay. Oh, right. You said you like pineapple on your pizza. You're a madman. Clearly not, because it's like this really popular thing to make people fight now. But so clearly there's a lot of people like pineapple on their pizza. Yeah, no, I love coconut. Big coconut fan. Yeah. Yeah, pina colada. Ironically, espresso martinis are coming back, and I had a freaking amazing one over Thanksgiving. We went to the other coast, and there's a really good cocktail bar in Fort Lauderdale called... Oh, my God. What the hell is it called? Shit. Sparrow. It's called Sparrow. It's like on the top floor of a high-rise hotel in Fort Lauderdale. But they have a really, really good cocktail program. And they had a riff on an espresso martini. And it was like legitimately God tier. It was so good.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another one that's usually terrible. But I had a really good one. So yeah, I'm going to go with that. Do you have what do you like drinking, Kyle? I know you're a cider guy. Do you drink cocktails?
Cider up here is terrible. I've got some opinions, man. Oregon always wants to carbonate their cider. They don't know how to do a good scrumpies. It's a quest and it's still ongoing.
I have always had carbonated cider if it's alcoholic, like a classic apple cider. No, but alcoholic cider, I don't think I've ever not had carbonated.
And then like the seltzers are in right now and they taste like scraped up candy. It's way too much flavor.
Too much flavor. You might be the only person I've ever heard say seltzers have too much flavor.
Really? Oh, maybe I don't know what I'm having though.
The joke about hard seltzers is it tastes like someone whispered the name of the fruit from the other room.
Okay. No, this was a full blown yell. Like these were screaming with flavor.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. I've been kind of enjoying seltzers. I've started drinking them over the summer. But yeah, I don't think they're particularly flavorful. It's just, I want alcohol and I don't want to get super full.
The Chicago spoiled me in that, you know, there was a store for meat and there was a store for bread. And because it's a city, you go to each store individually and then you have lunch by the end. And the ciders there were just amazing. And the ciders in Washington were also still good. But Oregon ciders are a mess and just awful. So I'm currently winded by purchases and have kind of given up. My desire for exploration has led me back home.
All right. Well, I think your answer then is just in general cider. People have probably forgotten about them and they should give them another try.
Yeah.
I certainly haven't had a cider in a long time. All right. D-Lon wants to know, says last year I asked Indian or Japanese. This year I'm asking if you were feeling Mexican or Italian. And I had to ask if D-Lon meant food or not. To which D-Lon said, yes, I mean food. First, I'm going to preface this by saying I am so very glad we don't have to choose, but Mexican all the way if I only had to have one.
Yeah, if we're ordering out, I never order Italian. Make that from home, you know, and don't make anybody cook noodles for you.
I like making people cook noodles for me, but I like eating it there. Takeout Italian's always disappointing.
Yeah, well, it's going to get cold. It's going to get odd. The cheese is going to change consistency. It ain't right. Mexican takeout though, just phenomenal, you know, go for it. It's all blob anyway, like excellent. When you're done, you take whatever fell on the plate and you stir it all together. And that's like a second meal.
Mexican is up there for like, that is a contender for if you only could eat one genre of food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Yeah.
And for me, I'm pretty sure it would be Mexican and Japanese food would war with each other. I really don't know what I would choose between those two. I very much love both of these, but yeah, Mexican food all day. It's probably the type of food I eat out like the, this is what I get the most when I go out, either for takeout or, you know, whatever.
We have a little tradition, since this would be, 2012. So it's going 9 years strong of ordering Chinese food on Christmas Eve. And what we did, as you know, but foolish 20-year-olds in our 20s, the last dollars, I took my last dollar and I put it in an ornament, one of those picture ornaments. No, because that was the last dollar I had left entirety after ordering Chinese that night.
Oh, my goodness.
To celebrate. Yeah. To celebrate our livelihood, our excitement, you know, celebrate our professions, our jobs. We order Chinese every Christmas Eve. And think back to that time when we spent our final dollars on that Chinese order like fools.
I've never heard that story, man. That's powerful. What Dude, a when that powerful memory every year. to have associated with takeout.
Yeah. Yeah. When that ornament comes out every year, it's definitely like, oh, everyone gather and see the final dollar that I had in my wallet after Chinese food in 2012. It was a stressful, but growing time. And I look on it fondly.
I've been there as well. That's why no one asked me, like, everyone was sandwiches, man. One of the best things I ever ate was a burrito in downtown LA at 2 a.m. When I was broke as hell working minimum wage at a pet store after graduating college into a horrendous recession. It's one of the best things I've ever had. I couldn't order because they only spoke Spanish and the person that took me there ordered on my behalf. And I just remember all these things going through my mind. Like, it was like the only time I had ever been to like downtown Los Angeles. I remember like my parents being like, oh, you're going to move to LA and you're going to die. It's so dangerous. And here I was middle of the night in actual like downtown LA. And I'm like, it's fine. People are out having a good time getting Mexican food. And it was, oh my God, it was the best freaking burrito I've ever had. No idea what the place was called. We'll never be able to find it again. I was just being drug along by a friend that I no longer am in contact with.
There are elements in play, you know, and that sort of thing. The best teriyaki bowl I ever had was from a street vendor when I was painting houses in downtown Portland one summer. And the boss came by and he's like, hey, do this whole line of stairs. And if you know Portland, it's basically built on the side of this mountain. So I, my whole day was nothing but going up and down stairs with a little tiny roller and painting the handrails. Damn. And I took a break all by myself. Normally, you know, foreman, everyone kind of buzzing around me. And just on those steps, I had this teriyaki chicken bowl. And it was like the most zen moment, I think, in my whole life of like pure exhaustion mixed with this moment of silence in the middle of a city.
I love food, man. Food is such a blessing.
Yeah.
It can make the worst days memorable in a good way.
There's a reason why the Travel Network talks about food so much.
Yes. Well, it's very associated with travel. Yeah. Moments in time. So, well, thanks for your questions, everybody. There's some really ridiculous ones in here. If you want to write in, be a part of the show, itncast@gmail.com. But that's going to bring us to the end of this episode, end of this year. So thank you very much. Whether this is your first episode or you've been listening from the beginning or everything in between, thanks so much for being a part of another year of Into the Nexus, everybody. It means the world to us. I didn't think we'd still be doing the show this long.
No.
Just in general, I figured I would have been onto another game by now, but also after, and then there was also just 2018. Where I was like, oh, shit.
We appreciate y'all continuing to help fuel this passion and enjoying the game alongside us.
Yeah. So thank you very much. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, everybody listening. Also, Heroes team, I know I've talked some mad shit the last few weeks, but we very much appreciate everything you do if you're still listening. But yeah, that's going to do it. Thanks again to our badass patrons for supporting us, for helping us pay our bills and buy our loved ones Christmas gifts. We very much appreciate it. If you want to support us, check out patreon.com/ITN. Give a huge shout out to our producers, Declan H., Sean B., Mike R., JM Tibbles, and Stephen J. We've got a new producer slot open. So if you want to be a producer, check out patreon.com/ITN. It has been up until very recently maxed out. You can catch us live Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/amovetv. And you can follow the show on Twitter at ITMcast. But before we go, Kyle, dude, where can folks find you?
You can find me and everything I do over at kyleferguson.com. But I do want to point everybody to youtube.com/amovetv. You may have heard about Final Fantasy 14, the darling internet MMO. I almost said internet provider. It does provide. It provides MMO.
If you already own it.
Yes. Yes, that's a very good point. But you should check out our Final Fantasy 14 content we're making over there. It has been an absolute joy to see its success over the holiday here, and very much looking forward to 2022 and more of that Final Fantasy content.
I'm looking forward to Heaven's Ward.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm there.
Yeah, our latest video is doing gangbusters. I'm shocked, stunned, and humbled. I've never had anything video wise do this well. I'm seeing a lot of familiar faces from Into the Nexus over in the comments. So thank you very much, everyone who's gone over there and helped get some eyeballs on this new venture of ours. It's a very much a labor of love. Video editing takes a little bit longer than podcast editing.
It's true.
So thank you for watching, everybody. YouTube.com/AMoveTV. That's all I want to promote to. Find me on Twitter at GarrettArt. I just hope everyone has a great new year. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We'll see you in 2022. Good luck and have fun, everybody.
Take care.